This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. 2020 was America's deadliest year of gun violence in more than two decades. So far, 2021 is worse. According to the Gun Violence Archive, roughly 54 Americans were killed by gunfire every day during the first 5 months of this year. And while all cities are feeling it, today we're shining a spotlight on one neighborhood in one city, Chicago. Chicago is experiencing a level of gun violence it hasn't seen since the mid-90s. Mayor Lori Lightfoot unveiled a plan last year to give prevention resources to higher-risk communities.
We're calling this initiative Our City, Our Safety, and emphasis on our. It's not me, it's not I, it's our. We all have to step up and have a role to play in keeping communities safe.
But many have yet to receive assistance, and gun violence is now up in some of those same areas. Today, we're taking a look at the toll of violence on communities and survivors. What impact has it had, and what are communities doing to stop it in its tracks? To answer those questions, we're zooming in on one neighborhood on the South Side called Roseland. Joining us now to talk about it is Lakedra Chavis. She's a Chicago-based reporter for The Trace. That's a nonprofit newsroom that covers guns and gun violence in the U.S. Lakedra, it's great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
So you spent months analyzing police and homicide data, as well as talking with Chicago residents who've been impacted by gun violence. What were some of your biggest takeaways?
Yeah, so some of my biggest takeaways when speaking with survivors and people who have just lived in neighborhoods that typically experience a lot of gun violence was that there is just this pervasive level of trauma in communities across Chicago, and that oftentimes people do not have the resources that they need in order to move forward in their lives. So things like mental health clinics, affordable housing, and employment. Another big theme that we found in our reporting when we looked at police data is that oftentimes the likelihood that an arrest would be made in some of these shootings is quite low, and that at least in the case of Roseland, shootings, CPD would suspend their investigations of shootings within just a month of these incidents taking place. So it was really shocking to see that, but also to speak with survivors who understood that that was already the case, and they sort of knew what was available to them and how difficult the road ahead would be for them, given everything that they know about Chicago and gun violence in the city.
Well, according to your reporting, more than 30,000 people have been shot in Chicago over the past decade. And of those 30,000, 5 in 6 survived. What do we know about the typical victims of gun violence in the city?
Yeah, so oftentimes people who are injured due to gun violence in Chicago tend to be quite young. We found in our analysis that of those, more than 30,000 shootings that have happened since 2010, more than half of the victims were people just on the cusp of adulthood. So, age 24 or younger. And that oftentimes, overwhelmingly, really, the majority of these victims are either Black or Latinx.
There's a lot of conversation nationally about gun violence, and a spotlight is often placed on Chicago. But when you look at it through the lens of your reporting, how do you think Chicago fits into that national dialogue?
Yeah, so oftentimes we talk about Chicago because it is a major city, and compared to Los Angeles and New York, Chicago sees quite a bit more in terms of its murder rate. It's a bit higher. But when we look at the country as a whole, and again, comparing murder rates, Chicago is not even in the top 3 or the top 5. When we look at the city and just the sheer number of murders that happen, Chicago does rank number 1 in that way. But, compared to the rest of the country, there are other places in the U.S. that are experiencing even higher levels of this type of violence and this type of trauma in their communities.
I want to zoom in on the Roseland neighborhood. Again, it's on the South Side of Chicago. Give us a sense of who lives there and what the neighborhood itself is like.
Yeah, so Roseland is a very old community area in the city. It started out about 200 years ago as a village of Dutch immigrants. And then, fast forward to the Great Migration and around the 1960s, within the span of about two generations, it became a majority Black community. And that is the way that it still is today. But a lot of the industry that was available in the 70s and the 80s has largely disappeared. But if you talk to people in Roseland, you're likely going to find people who have lived there for either almost all of their life, or, you know, they are a part of a generational family that has lived in Roseland, or at least on the South Side, for a number of decades. And, you know, I asked people to describe Roseland in one word, and it really varied. Some people described it as a village. Some people said it was dangerous or horrific. But oftentimes, the word that people would use to describe Roseland was resilient. And, you know, people are aware of the type of issues that the community is facing, but they want to persevere and to really uplift Roseland and ensure that it has a future.
When you look at national coverage of Chicago and the South Side and gun violence, what do you think is overlooked, or what do you think national media gets wrong altogether?
You know, I ask my sources this all the time, what they think national media gets wrong, what they think local media gets wrong. And oftentimes the response that people have is just, you know, these are real people that are being affected by this issue. So often when we talk about gun violence, it is in the sort of daily, weekly, monthly tally of how many people were shot and how many people died. But absent in that sort of conversation is that these are families, these are entire blocks, neighborhood blocks, and communities that are being devastated by something that is really quite traumatizing, and that it can have ramifications for, you know, an entire lifetime. So there's a lot more going on beyond just, you know, gun violence is up and gun violence is up in Chicago. There's a lot more nuance there.
Well, speaking of nuance, this year alone, 60 people have been shot in Roseland, but you say the neighborhood is often overlooked in discussions of gun violence in Chicago. Why is that?
Yeah, so oftentimes in Chicago, again, there is this focus on the weekly amount of people who have been shot in the city, which is, of course, important, but it, again, overlooks some of the deeper experiences that are happening. What I found interesting about Roseland is, as you mentioned, more than 60 people have been shot there this year. But it is not a sort of high level of gun violence that you would see on the west side of Chicago or even in other south side neighborhoods. And that's one of the reasons I found it interesting, is that it's this sort of steady level of gun violence. And if people are having these type of experiences in Roseland, then what does it say about, you know, neighborhoods that are experiencing some of the more extreme levels of this type of trauma?
We're talking about one Chicago neighborhood's response to the toll of gun violence. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Audible. Chasing Ghislaine is a new investigative podcast series from executive producer James Patterson and hosted by veteran journalist Vicky Ward, who has been covering the Jeffrey Epstein saga for nearly 20 years. Epstein's story intertwines with the disgraced heiress Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's ex-lover, former employee, and alleged co-conspirator. Chasing Ghislaine is available exclusively on Audible. To start listening, go to audible.com/chasing.
Good question. That's a really good question.
It's a great question.
This is free therapy.
Thank you for asking me that.
God, that's such a good question.
That's an interesting question.
But what Fresh Air interviews are really about are the interesting answers. Listen and subscribe to Fresh Air from WHYY and NPR.
We're talking about gun violence and the response from one of Chicago's neighborhoods. And I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Chicago is Trevon Bosley. He's a Roseland resident and community activist focused on gun violence prevention. Trevon, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I understand you lost both your brother and cousin to gun violence in Roseland in a span of about 6 months. You were very young, but first, I'm sorry for those losses. But can you tell us what happened?
Yeah. First, my cousin, he died in December of, I think, 2005. And he was just down the street from his home, sitting in his car, and someone began firing shots, and he was struck, and he later died. And then the next year, April 4th, 2006, my brother, he was unloading drums at church, and he was shot and killed. He was a well-known bass player throughout Chicago, and he was always at church. And this day, someone began firing shots at them, and my brother was hit, and he did not survive.
What was the impact on your family to lose two family members in such a short span of time? How did you cope?
Well, originally around that time, it was pretty bad for my family. My mother even tried to take her own life around that time, and it just got really bad. But a few years later, we got introduced to Father Michael Flager and Saint Sabina, and we all just decided to use the pain from losing my brother as a purpose and to actually go out into the community and do work. And around that time, I was probably like 10 or 11, and I joined the Brave Youth Leaders of St. Sabina, which is a violence prevention organization out of there that does community work, protests, rallies, marches. And I just began to do my work to try to keep my brother's name alive as well as trying to honor his name. And my parents did the same. My father, he's part of a group that gives ex-felons jobs, and my mother, she has a group called Purpose Over Pain, which is an outlet group for parents who've lost their children. They do community work as well. So we all just tried to turn our grief into some form of effort.
Do you remember whether there were resources available to you and your family, resources that you were easy to find to help you cope with these losses?
Oh, no. Resources were not really around us as far as like even mental health help, because obviously we needed it. We didn't celebrate holidays the same or anything. There wasn't any mental health clinics or anything around us that we knew to go to, or we're like, yeah, let's go here. As far as just even like people, well, just groups or anything reaching out for the funeral costs and everything, like it wasn't too many groups around that time, or at least in our area, doing that work, which is why we began doing our work. My mother and her group with parents, they do therapy for their parents. They have circles where they just come and talk. And we did the same thing in my group. We just became a family for people affected by gun violence. And we became that outlet that people needed.
Trevon, what was it like growing up in Roseland? How would you describe the community?
Roseland, I would say, was a mixed bag growing up. Going throughout the day and just going through the community, you know, you see happiness. You see a lot of people communicating. You see some of the same businesses that have been around for years that my pops went to as a child, that I'll go to as a child. You just see a lot of love and everything, but also you have, you know, the constant gunshots, the police sirens that you hear all day, every day. You wake up to them. You want to have the kids playing and hear kids laughter, but at the same time you hear screams and pain. And growing up in Roseland, you know, you just had to be on your attention. You just always had to be watchful of anything that could happen, because yeah, it's happy right now at the basketball court, but you never know, someone may come by and shoot it up because they're looking for someone. So you know, you just had to always be prepared for anything, no matter what time of the day it was.
Trevon, when you think about the psychological toll of the everydayness of gun violence, how do you think it's impacted and shaped you?
I know as a child, losing my cousin, then losing my brother, and I lost more people on the way. I knew more people getting shot. As a kid, just growing up, I didn't expect to be that old. I didn't expect to make it to 18. I'm not gonna lie. I didn't think about my life on a long term scale. Like, yeah, what you gonna do, you know, after high school? What you gonna be doing? I didn't think that far, because all I knew really growing up was just death. Like, a lot of people don't make it that far. My brother, he died at the age of 18. So, from a psychological aspect, I was more so hopeless. I'll say at that point, I was more so hopeless. Of course, thank God for the people in my corner, my family, Brave, my church family, Father Mike, a lot of other people that tried to show me the other aspects of life, that things are bigger than Chicago, that I will live past 18. You know, I will be able to create some sort of change with my life.
We spoke with Sam Haviland, a longtime counselor with Denver Public Schools, about the psychological toll on children who are exposed to repeated gun violence.
The continued complexity of building trauma increases the likelihood of the severity of symptoms from a psychological standpoint. The harder it is for us to unpack the many beliefs that a child has created based off of their experience. A child at that age is, developmentally speaking, very psychocentric, meaning that they are the reason for what happens to them, and belief systems set in that are further complicated because then they act out in ways to try to either recover or repeat so that they are in control of it.
Lakeidra Trevon mentioned a lack of resources when he and his family were recovering. How accessible is mental health support in Chicago?
Yeah, so mental health support is accessible depending on where you are in the city. When we look at areas that are disproportionately impacted by gun violence, particularly on the south side of Chicago and the west side, there are very few mental health resources for people that they can easily access and that they can afford. And so you have all of this trauma that people are trying to process, but very few professional resources for them to do so.
We're talking about how one neighborhood on the south side of Chicago is responding to gun violence. We'll be back with more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now let's get back to our conversation about the ripple effects of gun violence in communities. We're focusing on the Roseland neighborhood on the south side of Chicago and how it's coped with the toll of gun violence over the last few decades. Let's bring one more voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Chicago is Diane Latiker. She's the founder of Kids Off the Block. It's a nonprofit geared toward at-risk youth in Chicago. Diane, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you started Kids Off the Block in 2003. What led to its creation?
The fact that I had one daughter at home, Aisha, and I just wanted to keep up with her and make sure she graduated from high school and went to college. She had 9 friends, boys and girls, 13 and 15, and I was just hanging out with them, taking them skating and fishing. And my mom said, Diane, you should do something with the kids. They like respect and respect you. And that's how it started. I invited them into my living room. The next thing I know, there were kids coming from all across the community. In a span of almost 3 months, there were 75 in my apartment day and night. They wanted to get out of gangs. They wanted to go back to school. There were homeless kids. And that's how Kids Off the Block started.
So what kinds of programs do you currently offer? How's the organization evolved over the years?
Beyond my wildest dreams. When I started out, I just wanted to help the neighborhood kids to do better because the gangs were trying to recruit the boys. They were failing in school. And over the years, so many issues, young people were going through so many traumas, not only in their family lives, but also in the streets. And the streets were taking our young people, and the violence was prevailing year after year. And so, actually, my husband and I, we just wanted to help. We offer programming, conventional programming like tutoring, mentoring, sports, conflict resolution, out-of-town travel. We offer all kinds of different programs, but we found out that basically what they needed was core care. And that could be anything that ranged from taking them to school, making sure they had what they needed as far as supplies, feeding them. It just was a range of things that we had to do to make sure that these young people could be educated, because we know that's the key, and to make sure that they felt safe.
So providing a bridge across certain gaps in their lives, because I can imagine someone hearing our conversation and saying something as simple as providing a meal or transportation for a kid makes a difference. But what I'm hearing from you is the answer is yes.
Yes. Yeah, as simple as that.
When we talk about breaking the cycle of gun violence, what do you think people misunderstand about what it takes in, say, a community like Roseland?
Personally, I think that what they're missing is that we are part of the United States. We are part of this country, that we're not segregated communities off to ourselves dealing with violence. United States has a violence problem. Now, communities like mine across this country suffer with violence on a much larger scale. But what ticks me a little bit is the fact that our communities are always at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to talking about violence. Even the resources that we receive in our communities, they're not at the top of the scale because of where we are, where our communities are, who we are. And I have to say that race has a lot to do with it. We just have to be honest here. When they talk about mass shootings, Chicago suffers with mass shootings more than any city in this country to me. But yet, it's minimized. Well, why is it minimized? It's minimized because of where our communities are and who we are. And there's data to back that up. So I really don't understand why, as Black communities dealing with violence, we always have to say how deep it is in our communities and what we need, yet we don't get what we need because of who we are.
Lakeidra, I want to read you a comment. We got an email from Daniel who says, I'm African-American, born in Chicago, and still have family who primarily live on the South Side. It's a fair question to ask what political and government leaders are doing wrong when it comes to this issue, but it's also fair to ask what Black Americans are doing. So I'm only asking why we are not asked to look inward, just some personal and community-based reflection to determine what they can do to help solve this problem. And this is a narrative I hear quite a bit when we talk about gun violence, when we were talking about it when I was in Chicago, that there's this perception that residents aren't having these conversations, that they aren't actively trying to prevent it. What did you find in your reporting?
Yeah, so, you know, I actually spoke to a couple of people in Roseland who sort of had the same view, that it was, you know, a sort of inward conversation that residents should be having, you know, with themselves or sort of with other people. But, you know, I think that it's important to remember that violence, multiple types of violence, but especially gun violence, is a result of systemic inequalities. And that when we see gun violence play out across Chicago, it is happening predominantly in communities that for decades have really suffered from, you know, a lack of employment options, a lack of affordable housing. And all of these things have generational consequences. And so, you know, I think when we are asking questions like, you know, what are community members doing? Community members are trying to do the best that they can. But it does take, you know, a sustained investment from, you know, political leaders, city leaders, to address this issue as well.
Trevon, can you talk more about your community activism? I know you spoke at the March for Our Lives rally here in D.C. in 2018. What kind of work have you been doing?
Well, through Brave, I've been doing, of course, rallies and protests. So I've done tutoring as well, mentoring. We've done those things through Brave. I've also had the opportunity to speak with President Obama on CNN. I had the opportunity to speak at Martin Luther King's 50th assassination anniversary. And just we've been doing a lot of work in the community. Like we've been working with other groups, and even to the last question posed, we have to understand that it's a lot of groups like Brave, like Purpose of Pain, like my father's group. It's a lot of groups in Chicago that are doing the work, but we were told to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, and we were given sandals. Like, we are trying to do the best we can with the limited resources that we have, but we have to understand, yes, there's a lot of things that the community can be doing to counteract gun violence, but we have to understand that we also need the funds and the resources and everything else that other communities are getting to counteract the problems that they have. We're not receiving the same. So I just wanted to also touch on that too.
Now, Lakhidra, according to your reporting, police have ended half of all shooting investigations in Roseland after just 1 month. What else did you find out about the pathway to justice after gun violence occurs?
Yeah, so that in addition to that finding, we also found that police made an arrest in just about 5% of the shootings. And this is over 1,200 shootings that have happened in the past decade, just in Roseland alone. And, you know, I think talking to community members, they're well aware that this sort of traditional understanding we have of justice, so, you know, police making an arrest, someone going to jail, is very unlikely to happen for them. And I, you know, spoke to people who were shooting survivors. They were shot and they survived, and they're in their late teens and their early 20s. And some of them had been shot as recently as last year. And they even knew that this type of justice would probably not happen for them. And it was something that I was quite surprised by. It was something that they had just seemed to accept, and they wanted to focus instead on just moving forward, you know, in their recovery.
According to the Chicago Police Department, more people have been shot and more people have been killed in the city this year compared to last year. And these are levels of gun violence that haven't been seen since the mid-90s. Diane, what would you like to see from local officials on this issue?
Priority. Just priority. Because when you minimize a community's condition, whatever the issue is, then everything else follows that. As a public official, you set the tone for what that community gets. Whether you're representing that community is even bigger. So what I'd like to see is us being prioritized. Just say this community needs, and help us to get that so we can be a thriving community. I've seen so many thriving communities in Chicago, and I long for that for Roseland. I've been here 33 years, and I long for Roseland to be a thriving community where young people have outlets, a great education system, grocery stores, we're a food desert, just so many things that. And they're basic things that communities need to thrive. But yet we lack that because, to me, we're not prioritized.
Lakhidra, you know, this is such a complicated issue because when we talk about violence, as you said, the root causes are systemic, and there are the systemic issues to address, the historical issues to address when we talk about disinvestment in communities. What's the next step in your reporting as you continue to try to uncover what this all means and how to move ahead?
Yeah, so I hope the next steps in my reporting can be more of what I've done in Roseland, and just really driving home that, you know, violence really does impact communities. And when we talk about communities, we are not just talking about large community areas or neighborhoods, but we are talking about individual blocks and, you know, sections of housing and really public spaces. And so I hope through my reporting, I can provide, you know, a deeper understanding and clarity of just the really lasting impacts that this type of trauma can have for people.
That's Lakedra Chavis. She's a reporter for The Trace, a nonprofit newsroom that covers guns and gun violence in the U.S. Also with us today, Trevon Bosley. He's a Roseland resident and community activist focused on gun violence prevention. We were also joined by Diane Latiker. She's the founder of Kids Off the Block. That's a nonprofit geared toward at-risk youth. Lakedra, Trevon, Diane, thank you so much for speaking with us. Today's producer was Catherine Fink. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.